I never have a property of my own in Nigeria until I was about 57. Nobody will believe it. I couldn't afford it. We must start a serious mortgage system in Nigeria. It's very difficult for somebody to pay everything cash down.
Exactly.
You want to buy a home, cash down. You want to buy a home, cash down. For Nigeria to make it, we must embrace something, credit system. Without the credit system, there is no way we would have been able to buy any home in London. And it was from that credit system that we were able to borrow money to come and buy this house in Lagos. Lagos is the most sought after property market, I believe, in the world. Elsewhere, the real estate business can collapse from a 1 million pound home can come down if there is a recession. But in Nigeria, it keeps going up. Nobody wants to do business with a poor man. Nobody became a rich man overnight. There is no shortcut to doing good business. And in the property business, it's a capital intensive business. If you do shortcut, the land of 200 million, somebody says, I can sell it to you at 20 million and you buy it. Don't blame anybody but yourself. You're your own. We all like to lament in Nigeria. Nigeria is bad. Nigeria is bad. I got tired around 2010 about complaining, and then the images of Barack Obama in America also misled me into thinking Nigerian youths were ready for their own Obama. I was known everywhere. I'd interacted with world leaders. These guys don't have two heads. Unfortunately, I discovered that Nigeria was not ready. Nigeria was even going to retrogress. I decided to run anyway, but I lost. I tried it again 2 years ago. It didn't work. People said I got 0 years, but I paid for nothing and I got nothing. Now politics has become a cash and carry affair. You cannot build something on nothing. Our foundation is faulty. We must have selfless leaders who are willing to execute those programs. Most Nigerian leaders are seat warmers. Do your 4 years, do another 4 years, go home, and then this one will abuse the last one. It's a big challenge for us. Why do you think people go to do Thanksgiving in church after they get an appointment? Because, hey, it's like your own chance has come.
Ask.
I don't know how we're going to do it. I don't know how we're going to get out of it. I doubt if it's going to happen in my own lifetime. When I speak about hope, I'm talking about good leaders. Nigerian entrepreneurs like myself, we've learned to live without them. You have to create your own government, provide your own security, provide your home, provide your cars, provide your water corporation, provide your own electricity. As long as you work very hard enough, you'll be able to provide those things for yourself. If you look at a lot of our political leaders, that's the problem we have with them. People are selfish. You want to acquire. And then at the end of the day, you wonder why should a man steal in arrears and steal in advance. People steal what they don't need. I know a lot of very old money. I call them old money. And in their old age, when they are getting broke, they just sell one property. Imagine
exactly.
If you sell a property abroad now for £2 million and you even bring half of that money to Nigeria. You will live for the next 10 years very comfortably. For me, a property is my savings. Instead of putting it in a bank where tomorrow they might announce that the bank has collapsed. For me, the best business model I've seen in Nigeria is that of Dr. Mike Adenuga Jr. Hey, people can say anything. Thing, but it's not going to lose money like others because his business is organic in nature. His properties litter all the major cities in Nigeria. His daughter had a wedding recently. Nobody knew that he owned the land next to Mövenpick Hotel, the one on Alfred Rewanne Road now. Southern Sun Hotel. Next to it, massive. Look at the Makadenuga Center. Go on Ligale Ayorinde. Go on Adeola Odeku. You will find his properties everywhere. Okay. Whether the stocks go higher or go lower, doesn't affect him. You go to Ibadan, all the glow offices. You go to Akure, anywhere you go, corn oil. You find corn oil. I don't know of anybody who has that kind of properties in Nigeria, I doubt. And then you're not likely to notice it because it just operates underground just like that. It doesn't make noise like other noisemakers. That's real money. Real money is your ability to invest quietly and then reap bountifully.
Great.
Hello everyone and welcome to the KK Show, Key to Keys, your ultimate guide in unlocking the secrets in the Nigerian real estate market. Now today, we have an icon in the world of media, politics and entrepreneurship, a man whose voice has shaped narratives all over the world. Ladies and gentlemen, prepare to be inspired by living legend, Chief Dele Momodu.
Hello, thank you for inviting me and welcoming me to your very, very beautiful office, your beautiful studio. I'm highly impressed.
Thank you so much, sir.
A touch of class.
Thank you so much, sir. It's so we're honored to actually have you
here.
Thank you. So let's go straight to it. Now you've built Ovation International. What inspired you to birth such vision?
Well, I always like to say that I'm a child of destiny and a child of diversity. I didn't plan to be a journalist.
Oh.
I never studied journalism, mass communication, whatever you want to call it. I was born in the ancient town of Ilefe in 1960 to very humble parents, if I can borrow that cliche. I lost my father very early in life. I was 13 years old in 1973 when my father suddenly passed on. And I was left with a poor, unlettered mother. And if I say life was hard, that would be an understatement. Because everything changed overnight. Even the home where we were living, we couldn't afford to pay rent any longer. And so we were kicked out. We had to go and squat with our cousins in Modakeke. So that's my background. And I had to struggle through school. I did my school start 3 times.
Ah.
Yes. The first time I flunked it, I had a poor grade 3. So my mom asked me to go back. Second time, the election results were withheld because they said there was mass leakage of examination papers in that year, 1977. I went back in 1978, and that was when I finally had all my credits. And then I applied to the university. We were the first set of Jambites in 1978. Mm. And I was admitted to the then University of Ife to study Yoruba. I'm sure that would amaze you that I studied you. So that's to tell you that I never prepared for my journey in journalism. My dream was to be a teacher, probably marry a teacher and live happily thereafter. But after doing my degree, I did my NYSC, but I couldn't get a proper job. So I started trying this and that. But eventually, I had to go back in 1986 to the same effect. And at this time, I did a master's degree in English literature, or what we call literature in English. And nobody had ever tried it at the university. I was the first to have a first degree in Yoruba and a master's in literature in English. Even the university was going to reject me until a professor intervened and insisted, oh, if something has never been done before, there's always a first time.
So
why can't you give him the opportunity? And I was given the opportunity, and here we are. Then I finished that. I still wanted to be a teacher. I couldn't get a job. I couldn't get a teaching appointment.
Even after your master's?
Even after my master's, because there was an embargo on appointments and promotions in the higher institutions by the military government. You know, they killed our education. They were not interested in education at all. That was the beginning of the crisis that we have in education today in Nigeria. So, to cut a long story short, it was out of joblessness and desperation that I came in search of greener pastures in Lagos. I wanted to be a writer for The Guardian because I was already stringing for a couple of newspapers. The Guardian newspaper in Lagos would publish an article and pay me 25 naira at that time, which to me was a lot of money. And I would publish 4. And then travel to Lagos to collect 100 naira. And I was also writing for the Sunday Tribune in Ibadan. They were not paying me anything. So, but it was a good foundation for me so that when I was now looking for a permanent job and came to Lagos, I was able to get a job with the African Concord magazine because they were already familiar with my style of writing. And so that was it. I never planned to be... So when you talk about the brand Ovation, again, I never knew I would be a publisher one day. I thought I would just be working for other people because after African Concord, I got a job at the Classic magazine, which was owned by the late Mayelin Ezekiel, who was once married to Richard Mufedamijo. Mm. So I worked with them till 1991. Then I resigned. So when I resigned, I wanted to now do my own publication. which was going to be called Ovation, because a friend of mine, Kunle Bakare, brought out his thesaurus and we were looking at different possible titles. And then Ovation hit me, bam. And I said, Ovation, loud for a purpose. That was how the slogan started. And then money says, if it is not at home, make no plans in its absence. Funding became an issue. So I approached a couple of rich guys and both of them declined. So I couldn't get it. So I rested the case and then moved into public relations. So I established a PR company and I was getting good accounts from Chief MKO Abiola, you know, through his son, Kola Wole Abiola. Then later I got Dr. Mike Adenuga Jr. Then I started getting people like, you know, Mr. Kim Bello Osage, who at a point was the chairman of UBA, and so on and so forth. So I forgot about publishing until Chief Abiola went into politics. I joined him. And then after the June 12, 1993 election, the election was annulled. And so I decided to join him in the struggle. I was put away in detention in Alagbon camp. After I was released, I still continued to support him until Abacha came. And, you know, with Abacha, there was no negotiation.
Sure.
So one day I was declared wanted, accused of being one of the brains behind the pirate radio station known initially as Radio Freedom, but later became Radio Kudrat. But at that stage, I didn't know anything about it. But who are we to educate Abacha? That I didn't know anything about it. So I had to take cover. I had to leave Nigeria under the cover of darkness, moved through the bush into Cotonou in Benin Republic in 1995. This was 25th July 1995. And after getting to Cotonou, I had three people who accompanied me. It was a very, very scary experience. So when I got into Cotonou, I went somewhere to change because I had to disguise a bit like a farmer going into his farmland. And but I was still scared that Cotonou was too close to Nigeria and Abacha might chase me to Cotonou. So I left for Lome in Togo that same day. And when I got to Togo, I still wasn't satisfied because Togo, again,
it's
French.
Exactly.
And it's also a French-speaking country. I don't speak French. I said, no, let me go to Ghana. And that was my first day in Ghana, July 25th. So I was in Ghana for 3 nights. From there, I started plotting my exit to England. Fortunately, I had a multiple British visa on my passport. So I was able to leave Ghana on the night of 28th and arrive London Gatwick on the 29th. And that was how the story started. It was a new trajectory entirely for me. But after a couple of months in England doing nothing, my younger cousin asked me one day, so bros, what will you be doing in London? I had no answer. And that was when it hit me that I was practically jobless. And he told me, no, I have to do something, that if care is not taken, I'll be washing dishes or even washing dead bodies. And I said, no, it's not going to be my portion. But that's the reality in England. You must work to pay your bills, you know. So that was how he suggested to me that you were a journalist back home, a good one at that. So why can't you start something in London? I said, no, where is the funding? That even at home, I tried to start something. I couldn't. So now in England, it's even more complex. I said, no, let's do a business plan. And that's the lesson I like to teach, that for you to do any project, you must have a business plan. So that business plan showed us that we needed £150,000 to be able to start the business, small scale, not even big scale.
Gave you a clear picture.
Yeah, and I approached my bank manager at the National Westminster Bank at the time, a white lady, who told me, said, Dele, you have no history of doing business in the UK, so there is no way any bank will offer you a loan. Said, but I can see the enthusiasm on your face. I'll be willing to risk £5,000 overdraft. That's all I can. But out of 150,000, what can 5,000 do out of 150,000? Anyway, my uncle, Chief Fatoye, back home in Nigeria, we spoke to him and he said, well, in our family, we don't have rich people. We're all scholars, we're all intellectuals, but none of us had money. But that from his savings, he would try and put something together. And he sent us the first £10,000, you know, to start the business. But you can still imagine out of 150,000, 10,000 plus 5,000 overdraft, then some of my friends also put some money together and we had a total of about 20,000. But we had this audacity of hope and vision that we will not fail in our mission if we start something. So the next question was, what were you going to do with the little that we had? It's a question of priority now. You have to prioritize what was available. And I had a partner who was supposed to join us as MD, and I was, because I was a refugee at that stage in England, I was ready to be just an executive director. And I suggested to the team that, look, we don't have money. A man who is down should fear no fall. You're already down, you are down. So why don't we invest this money on our image? And he couldn't understand. He said, what do I said, let's go and get a very good office. And I suggested we should go to a place where Nigerians would normally not have an office. It's like coming here now in Lekki. Mm-hmm. Like a lot of people will believe, to be cheaper for you to go to Mushin or Oshodi or something. Sure. So I said, no, let's go to Docklands. At that time, Docklands was new. We were among the first three black businesses in Docklands at the time. You know, and that's where we had some of the biggest media organizations, like the Canary Wharf, the tallest building in London at the time. So we got a place at the South Key Station. And my friend said, no, it can't go along with it, that my ideas are too flamboyant, that you know, we shouldn't do that. I said, no, we don't have money, so but what we have, let's prioritize it. And we spent £14,000 out of 20 to get that office. My friend pulled out. He pulled out completely.
Must have thought you were a joke.
He said he can never walk. What? You know, that I'm a spendthrift and all that. So, but I've always been a risk taker. And like I said, I believe so much in destiny that better to try and fail than fail to try. So, you know, so we tried and that was how Ovation started. And every time he sees me now, he says, you this man, he calls me Bob D. He said, Bob D, you are a magician. I never believed you could pull it off. And I said, it's not about me. It's about God and the ability, you know, to be tenacious. We had issues. We had challenges upon challenges. If we want to start talking about that, we won't live here today. But God kept us firmly in control. And so the rest is history today.
I don't even know where to start from.
It's a long story. It's a long journey.
This is an eye-opener. You've inspired just this short story. You've inspired thousands of people out there, even myself. You know, in today's world where you try once, try twice, and that is the end. You just feel like, you know what? Maybe it's coming from my father's side or my mother's side. You know, but from the very start, you had to write jump over. I mean, as at then, I'm sure people would have told you, just give up, go and learn work.
Even my mother, who didn't go to school, one day asked me, Ayoba Midele, she was in bed, who read Dr. Tony, Ofedi Babala Unindan, Ayoba Midele, what's wrong with you going to university to go and study Yoruba? Are you that dull? Are you such a dullard? Or do you want to be a herbalist or Babalawo or something? And I said, no, mommy, you know, Yoruba that be Gesi, that be Faranse, that Yoruba is like any other language. And if we don't study our own languages, then they will go extinct one day.
Yeah.
You know, but when I couldn't get a job. I even applied at a stage. I wanted to go and read law after my first degree. They didn't take me. And I'm like, what am I? Abi, see trouble. Is this Yoruba that you did? So the concept that Yoruba was such a cheap course, but see how Yoruba today is exploding.
That's true.
Across the world,
yes.
You see Davido singing with Yoruba. You even see, you know, P-Square,
foreigners.
Foreigners are now forced. Look at Ashake, see what Ashake, you know, all of them, Burna Boy, what they are doing with our local language. So we were ahead of our time. We were the pathfinders.
Yes.
And the pathfinders would always suffer
for
those coming behind. But I'm so proud of myself that's what I studied. Because when I write, I think first in Yoruba before I now transliterate into English. And people say, my English is flowery, it's musical in nature, it's readable, it's pleasurable.
Yeah.
It's because of that Yorubaness in me. And I'm not even a full Yoruba man. My mom is Yoruba. My father came from Edo State. So that's another story on its own.
Oh, wow. I'm sure a lot of people are learning that right now for the first time. Wow. I mean, your story is that of tenacity, audacity. I think audacity should be a part of your name.
Definitely.
You are so audacious. I mean, to have walked through everything you've walked through, which I believe what you've said, just a tip of the iceberg of what you've actually been through. You've gone through it and you're still standing strong and ready to face the next challenge ahead.
You have no choice.
Which success story has shaped your narrative till date?
It's difficult because I've had strings of successes and failures. A lot of people like to speak about their successes without talking about their failures. I think failures drove me more than successes. A lot of people can tell you, oh, everything was rosy. For me, it has never been. For example, you were talking about real estate just now, and I just smiled to myself. I never have a property of my own in Nigeria until I was about 57. Nobody will believe it.
You didn't buy your own house?
No. I couldn't afford it because I was spending all my money building my brand. I wanted a super brand. I wanted a brand that anywhere I enter in the world, people must recognize me, either for good or for bad, but mainly for good.
Good.
And I wanted to build a double brand like Richard Branson. When you mention Virgin Atlantic, your mind goes to Richard Branson.
Yes.
When you mention Richard Branson, your mind goes to Virgin.
Mm-hmm.
So the same thing with Bill Gates. When you mention Microsoft, your mind goes to Bill Gates or Bill Gates, your mind. So it's the same thing that happened to me. And today, when you mention Ovation, in fact, some people might not even remember my name. I go in airports and people stop me. Oh, that's that man, Mr. Ovation. And, you know, that makes you feel good that you've been able to build a double brand. It's not easy to build. You can build one brand, but to build a double brand is a lot of work and effort. And that's what I invested in so heavily. So that is why I couldn't afford to rush and be doing the fairity that they do in Nigeria. Everybody wants to build theirs. Then I also had my own ideas about whatever I wanted to own. It must have a touch of class. Yes, it's not just about doing things. Anything. It's about doing it well. So my first property I bought in Ikoyi, and I took all the time in the world to get to that stage. But today I'm happier for it. So it's worth it. It's a property that will increase in value.
Exactly.
And it will not depreciate in value.
Exactly.
So, and that has been the story of my life. So
wow, so, I mean, it's a combination of, so you can't even place one.
No, there are two. At every stage, everything was preparing me for the next stage.
True.
I can give you an example. When I was about 22 years old, I went with my friend, Sheikh Omoborewo, to see his dad. His father was the deputy governor of Old Ondo State, when Ondo was a combination of Ondo and Ekiti State, so big state. And we were chatting and talking politics. And the man looked at me. You, this young man, you are so intelligent. How old are you? I said, I'm 22. And you know, you have this knowledge of the political history of Nigeria. I said, I read voraciously. I'm a greedy reader.
Yeah,
I read.
I saw your books.
I read, you know. So said, oh, okay, when are you finishing school? I said, very soon. Said, okay, after your youth call, I would like to see you. I would want you to work with me. And so that was how I started working for this great man at the age of 23. Unfortunately, within months, the Buhari coup happened. And then they put all of them in prison. But that now became another stage in my life. I started going to visit him in our prison almost on daily basis. I was meeting a lot of the big politicians, you know, big people. Then he would also send me to Lagos to go and see some of his friends who are also in different prisons. And now, unknown to me, I was also building a network.
A net worth, yeah.
That would be useful to me in the future, you know. Thereafter, after I left his job, the next person I worked for was Oba Okunadesiju Ade Olubuse II, the Oni of Ife. So you can imagine a young man of 25 years, you know. And I was meeting all the top people in Nigeria in the palace. Again, I did not know it was preparing me for another future. Then when I left him, that was when I went back for my master's at the university. And after that, I came to Lagos. Who was the next person I worked for? Chief MKO Abiola. So you can just imagine such a trajectory. It's uncommon. And it's almost surreal that a young man who was a nobody, son of nobody, though my parents were somebody as human beings, but when you talk in terms of status. They were nobody. Nobody reckoned with them. But God was preparing me for this long journey.
Yes.
And so I came to Lagos, worked for Chief Abiola. Within 2 years, he had identified me in Concord. And I was a man who had maybe thousands of people that he employed. And I was able to stand out. And within 2 years, I left Concord and joined Mayel in Ezekiel. And I became the highest paid editor. I got to Lagos in 1988 at the age of 28. I had no house. I was squatting. In fact, a girlfriend of mine that I had thought I would marry abandoned me. She jilted me because I was a squatter. That's what she told people, that, no, this one, there is no future for him. Every time he comes, he can't take me to any good hotel. He will take me to a friend's house and all that. So life for me has been a potpourri of sadness and joy. It was never a bed of roses.
So what would you say is the most important decision that you've made that significantly changed your life?
Again, it cannot be just one decision, but I know that I'm quite brave. I do things the way my mind tells me to do it. But I think one decision was for me to escape from Nigeria. That would be the most crucial decision because it was difficult. I never planned to leave as a Nigerian. Some people dream of going abroad. No. I went abroad out of absolute necessity and out of desperation, not because I wanted to. And when it was over, it was also very sudden. It was over on July 7, 1998, the day my adopted father, Chief MKO Abiola, died. That was the day I said, exile is over. There's nothing I'm waiting for. Because I ran away hoping that he will come out of prison and he will be able to regain, his mandate. Unfortunately, he lost his life in the process. So I had to come back home, to commiserate with the family. Then went back briefly to England to start packing my things to come back home. And that was it. But that decision to leave Nigeria triggered a chain of reactions in my life. Having to have my family abroad, all my children. Okay, my first son had been born before I ran away in England, but he came back home briefly. And then so my wife had to smuggle herself and my fourth child, who was under 1 year old. You can imagine going through the airport and almost being arrested. I went through the bush. So everything about my family got scattered to the winds, but God brought everything back.
That would have been a together. Very crazy and scary
very,
experience.
Very. You know, so for me, that's why I always talk about destiny. I don't believe that it was due to my power or the knowledge that I have or whatever. God just wanted to use me as an example to the world that I can lift up a man from the mud and take him to the pinnacle of the temple.
So you've gone from being a journalist to running for presidency. What inspired you to take such bold step and what challenges did you face?
Well, it is interesting that, again, I never even thought I would contest to be a local government chairman. But I've been in the struggle since 1978 when I entered the university. That was the year of the Ali Must Go riot. And I was in Ife. And anybody who knows about Ife will know that we are synonymous with Aluta. The struggle continues. Victoria, Saturn, victory, Saturn, And as I said, I was a bit of a radical. I read a lot of radical books. As a young man, from Karl Marx, Frederick Engels, Amilcar Cabral, Franz Fanon, Ngugi wa Thiong'o, Wole Soyinka's The Man Died was one of my earliest books that really radicalized me. And the quote, "The man dies in all who keeps silent in the face of tyranny,"
You know, I read about the Mauma who struggle in Kenya. I read about Jomo Kenyatta or Jinga Odinga. I read about Zambia Shall Be Free by Kenneth Kaunda. I read Alex Laguma, the South African struggle against apartheid. You know, so we were young. I read the books of Nawal El Saadawi, the Egyptian writer who was put in prison a couple of times, you know, for abuse. I read about Somalia, you know, how Somalia disintegrated. I read the works of Nuruddin Farah and even wrote my master's thesis on it. I read about Mariam Abba from Senegal, Mongo Betty from Cameroon. You know, so I've always been a scholar, very radical in nature. And so that, I believe, prepared me for that vision. That look, instead of lamenting like the biblical Jeremiah, we all like to lament in Nigeria, Nigeria is bad, Nigeria is bad. And I liken it to a beauty contest where you have a beautiful daughter at home and then you are saying, Miss Nigeria is ugly. So why didn't you allow your own daughter to go for the contest? So I got tired around 2010 about complaining. And then the images of Barack Obama in America also... I would say, in quote, misled me into thinking Nigerian youths were ready for their own Obama. And I thought I would fit that description. You know, I've done a lot at that age. I was 50 years old. I had accomplished, you know, a global status, you know, traveling to over 60 countries on all continents. I was known everywhere. And I had interacted with world leaders. So I thought, look, these guys don't have two heads. So why can't I use my expertise, my intellect, and everything to help my country? Unfortunately, I discovered that Nigeria was not ready. It was not that it was not ready. Nigeria was even going to retrogress, just going backwards instead of going forward. You know, you have some hope if things were improving slowly but steadily. But in our own case, we were worse than being in a state of inertia, you know. So I decided to run anyway in 2011. I contested on the platform of the National Conscience Party, which had produced a candidate like Chief Ganifa Wayimi, the radical lawyer, before me. But I lost. I lost, but I was proud of my decision because I believe the highest dream you can have is to lead Africa's biggest nation. And to think that I'd been on the ballot paper once will be an experience of a lifetime for me. Sure. I tried it again 2 years ago using the platform of PDP. It didn't work. People said I got zero, yes, but I paid for nothing and I got nothing because now politics has become a cash and carry affair. So it's not for poor people or the faint-hearted.
So what challenge basically did you encounter?
The major challenge...
You know, a lot of people are scared of going to politics because...
I wasn't scared. The major challenge is always funding. Funding is number one.
Not insecurity.
No. If you have money, you get your own security. Yeah, if you have money, you'll get your own security anywhere in the world, not just in Nigeria.
Yeah, true.
Anywhere in the world. If you see young artists carrying bodyguards up and down everywhere, even on the plane, they are carrying their bodyguards on international flights. Yeah, if you have the money and you can fund it. Right? But the major thing is that the logistics. Look at Kamala Harris. She was able to raise over $1 billion and she still lost an election. That's in America. So now imagine a place where you have... a lot of very poor people. A lot of them also have not gone to any school. So I think the politicians kept them deliberately ignorant
yes.
so that they can be manipulated.
During election, exactly.
So,
would you consider running again?
No.
Why?
Experience is the best teacher. I've come to realize that there are powers that you can describe as principalities.
Mm-hmm.
That control Nigeria.
Sure.
And unless a major political party decides to adopt me, where you have a consensus of people who say, hey, Dele Momodu is best suited to change and to lead Nigeria. then I can consider it. But if I would have to pick my money to go and buy a presidential nomination form of about 100 million sometimes, the last one, I spent about 50 million buying the form. Yeah, 50 million would have bought me a property, you know, and it was a waste. I didn't, nobody vote, not even one vote, because everything was monetized. There was one of the candidates who paid as high as $30,000 per delegate, and we had 774 delegates. Yeah. So how do you want to compete with them? They've stolen the country blind, and they are doing all kinds of deals to make money, especially those in the oil-rich areas. It's not easy. You can't compete with them. That's why they insult Nigerians anyhow, because the amount of money available to them in raw cash, there is no country in the world where people control raw cash like Nigeria. The bulk of their money is not in any bank, so they are not traceable to any bank. And so they have the money. If today you say to some politicians that, look, you need $500 million to become a president, they will find it. So people like us, where will I start from? So I'm not bothered. I've almost given up. I'll be 65 my next birthday. I may look and feel young, but truth is, I'm an old man. Chivemke Abiola, my father, died before he was 61. That scares me every day. That, look, we're all living on borrowed time. So why do you want to kill ourselves over politics? If the people of Nigeria need a good leader, they know when and how to find him. But right now, I don't think we're ready.
What key reforms or policies do you think are most urgently needed to move Nigeria forward in terms of education, the economy, and governance?
You see, you cannot build something on nothing. Our foundation is faulty. Yes, it's good to talk about education. It's good to talk about health. It's good to talk about housing policies, all those things. No, the foundation itself is we must have selfless leaders who are willing to execute those programs. So once a leader is not ready, the way I describe it is that most Nigerian leaders are seat warmers. They just warm the seat. Do your 4 years, do re-election, do another 4 years, go home. And then this one will abuse the last one. The last one will abuse the, you know, it can't continue. It's a rat race that cannot continue. Something will have to give. How, when, I don't know. But definitely this rat race cannot continue. So they are not ready to change anything. Yes, education is very good. But who will give you education? Somebody, you ask how many leaders actually went to school in Nigeria. Mm-hmm. And when I talk about going to school, it's not about getting certificate. It's about allowing the school to pass through them.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a big problem. It's a big challenge for us, because every leader, once you get there, why do you think people go to do Thanksgiving in church after they get an appointment? Because, hey, it's like your own chance has come to partake in the cutting of the national cake. That's it. So I don't know how we're going to do it. I don't know how we're going to get out of it. But I doubt if it's going to happen in my own lifetime. I doubt it. A miracle can happen. Yeah, anything short of a revolution, I doubt. Yeah.
We're optimistic.
It's good. Age is still on your side. It's not
true that. Side, okay, you said you bought your first house at 57, right? How has the real estate journey, your real estate journey been?
Well, again, I am not the best example of that journey in real estate. I would say I've just been fortunate.
Mm.
One, I was fortunate that I ran abroad. I was fortunate that as a refugee, the British government provided us with a home, which you will hardly find in any other country. That's why I have the maximum respect for the land of Her Majesty, now His Majesty. So when we were there, Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II was very much alive. And we applied to the Home Office, which is like their own ministry there, where you go to apply as a refugee. You need papers. And we were granted full asylum. I don't know if any other family was granted full asylum like mine. We were granted full asylum, so that enabled us to get a home. And because of the welfare system, again, I will always doff my hat to the British government. The welfare system made it possible for us to get a home in a rich neighborhood, because the gap between the rich and the poor is one of the reasons I contested. You know, the gap, they don't want it to be too wide. So in the same neighborhood where you have the wealthiest of the wealthiest, there are also council flats nearby. So the council flat we were given was in Hampstead East, which is a very posh neighborhood. In fact, our apartments shared the same fence with the Royal Free Hospital. And after a few years, we were offered the place to buy. And then, of course, we didn't have money to buy it. So what we then did was to approach one of our banks, Halifax Bank, which was my wife's bank, and then for a mortgage. And they came, valued the property at £132,000. The council was selling it to us at £132,000, but the bank valued it at £230,000. So you can imagine the amount of equity that we got instantly. So that was how we got that property. Then later, we bought where we live now, somewhere in Cricklewood. And it was another miracle how we were able to package it. And then over 20 years down the line, we decided to refurbish the place. My wife is very good with interiors and all that. Okay. And so we repackaged it. And the property jumped into over £2 million.
Wow.
Yes. So that is, so in today's, that's over $4 billion in today's. So that's why I say, my own case is very peculiar with God. I don't know how God did it. So when people go to government, you get that kind of money if you are in government. I've never been in government. I've been in opposition since 1982, 42 years on, and I have never been in government. So I just manage whatever God gives me. And that was how our property thing started. Then when we bought the house in Lagos, the one in Ikoyi, we were lucky and fortunate that we met a gentleman, God bless his soul, you know, Femi Fosco, who was ready to space out the payments. Yeah, so I didn't have to pay at once. If I had to pay at once, it would have been almost impossible to do so. And then that was how we got it. And then our office in Ikeja GRA, the Ovation office, when we bought it, and that's what I want to emphasize, that for Nigeria to make it, we must embrace something, a credit system. Without a credit system, there is no way we would have been able to buy any home in London. And it was from that credit system that we were able to borrow money to come and buy this house in Lagos. So a lot of people that you see who are coming home now to buy properties from you, and you know, it's because they have access to good credit abroad. So once your credit rating is good enough, then you can. So we must start a serious mortgage system in Nigeria. It's very difficult for somebody to pay everything cash down. You want to buy a car, cash down. You want to buy a home, cash down. So for me, that has been the story of my life. It's very, very important that you invest, because I know a lot of very old money. I call them old money. And in their old age, when they are getting broke, they just sell one property. Imagine if you sell a property abroad now for £2 million and you even bring half of that money to Nigeria. You will live for the next 10 years very comfortably.
So true.
Yes.
So true.
And then once you've also invested in the education of your children and they've gone to good school, then they can survive on their own.
Exactly.
You know? And some of them can even take over the mortgage payments on your behalf. So that has been the story of my life, and I'm extremely grateful to God.
Great. So your first investment in Nigeria was in Lagos?
Yes, in Lagos.
Have you had other investments in Lagos?
Oh, yes. I have other investments in Lagos, but I don't like to talk about my investments.
That's fine. So, basically, we're just trying to, you know, explore how the investment in Lagos or real estate market has affected you.
Lagos is the best place to invest. Some people say they like Abuja. I'm not too familiar or too comfortable with Abuja. I just see Abuja as a no man's land. And that was the concept of Abuja when it was founded. I traveled to Australia at the time, and I was invited to a place called Canberra. And I heard that Canberra was where the idea for Abuja came from. So Canberra is the capital, the official capital of Australia. And so it's a no man's land. And I'd rather invest in Lagos. Lagos, you can buy a property today for $250 million. And in another two, three years, it could be worth half a billion.
That's correct.
Yeah. Lagos is the most sought after property market, I believe, in the world. Trust me.
Oh.
Elsewhere, yeah, the mortgage, whatever, the real estate business can collapse. And from a $1 million home can come down if there is a recession. But in Nigeria, it keeps going up. I've never experienced it where you buy a property and you lose on it.
Have you ever encountered a demolition? Has any of your properties been demolished?
No. You see, again, I think based on my experience abroad, I am not a reckless person. I try to do due diligence before I would invest. And once my lawyers in particular, they go all out to search for the property. I don't buy land. I believe the most dangerous thing is land. I would rather let other people, it's the same way with my printers. People ask me, why don't you have your own printing press? I say, I'm not a printer, I'm a writer. So let other people worry about my printing. I will take my work to them and then they deliver the magazine to me. No headache. So the same way, let someone else go and buy the land. I'm more interested in apartments anyway, because again, I could see that those days when people build mansions, they are getting out of vogue.
Vogue, yes.
You don't need mansions. It's a waste. Most people, their bedrooms are being occupied by rodents on their behalf.
Very true.
Their children have left home and you don't pray that your children will come and live and die in your house.
Exactly.
So I believe in acquiring flats, except for the Ovation office, which is a standalone within an estate. Everything else I'm doing in Lagos are flats. In Ibadan, the Dele Momodu Leadership Center in Ibadan, it's for charity purposes, so it's not a place. I only have one room to myself in the entire edifice. So I've learned what I saw abroad is what I'm bringing back home. A lot of people go abroad and they never learn anything new. I've realized that the higher you go and the older you become, you must begin to wind down. Oh, yes. Because you're not going to live forever. So right now, I'm okay with just one room, one office. Wherever I am, I make sure I have a library because that's my first love. And so that has been the story of my life.
So for investors watching, many diasporans right now are scared of investing. What would you advise them?
No, they should buy. There are good apartments and they should investigate the owners. And if possible, if they can go there physically, because a lot of people can do razzmatazz for you on social media and you want to drop your money. No, you've worked very hard for your money. Please come home, even if it's just for a weekend, and make sure you have the right lawyers, the right developers, and then come together, put your heads together, and then you can take a decision. But don't rush into anything. It's not necessary. Because you see, a home is something you cannot carry
with you.
If someone, if someone sells you a car or something, it's a different thing. But a home is in one spot, so you have to be careful. And there are a lot of scammers around right now.
As someone with access to Nigeria's elite circles, what common strategies have you noticed among successful real estate investors, and how have you been able to apply them?
What I've realized is that it's not easy to build a reputable organization.
Yeah.
So the commonest thing these days is to go again for those developers who have attained the super brand status. They are very well known. Their integrity is not in question. I mean, I saw the one you did, I think, with Pastor Matthew Ashimolowo the other day. Though in Nigeria, I don't think it's been long in the property business. Yes. But because of his background.
Yes.
Not because he's a man of God, but as a, when you follow him, even his church, you will see that once upon a time, that was the best church, the biggest church in England for any black man. And then when you look at his touch of class, his taste, you will realize that, okay, you want to do business with it. One of the things I've learned anyway about Bia, and I say this without any fear of contradiction, is that nobody wants to do business with a poor man.
That's true.
So you have to work hard to get,
mm-hmm.
and nobody became a rich man overnight. But then that journey, there is no shortcut. Let me just put it that way. There is no shortcut to doing good business.
Exactly.
And in the property business, it's a capital intensive business. So if you do shortcut, the land of 200 million, somebody says, I can sell it to you at 20 million and you buy it. Don't blame anybody but yourself. You have your own. So I've been trying to make sure that I surround myself with the best people.
Mm-hmm.
I am still in the process of acquiring.
Okay.
I am not selling. I have no intention of selling because I don't need...
You've seen these properties?
Yeah, they are growing.
Yeah.
Oh, they are growing. There are areas in Lagos that if you acquire property, Ikoyi, Victoria Island, if you can get Banana Island, if you can get Eko Atlantic City, if you can get the likes, get your GRA, you are guaranteed for life that no matter how slow it is, it will continue to go up.
Appreciate.
And to appreciate. So for me, that has been my experience. I'm not going to say I just want to buy land anywhere. There is no hurry, like I said. And I'm not under any pressure to sell. Mm. So for me, a property is my savings. Instead of putting it in a bank, where tomorrow they might announce that the bank has collapsed.
Yes.
You understand? But if you buy a good property in a good neighborhood, especially apartments, everybody's looking for apartments these days. In fact, a lot of people are getting tired of staying in hotels. So you can see that two-bed apartments, one-bed apartments, studio apartments, people are looking for it, shortlets, and so you can invest in it.
So you've been around successful people for a long time. I mean, from your story, you've always been around successful people. And I believe that they are also investors, right? So why do you think these successful people actually invest in real estate? Why do they do real estate?
Like I said,
we hear people talk about, you know, shares, bonds, and other mediums.
People have lost their money through shares. It happens a lot, even all over the world. That's why today you hear Bill Gates is the richest man in the world. Then tomorrow, someone else has taken over because they are investing heavily. For me, the best business model I've seen in Nigeria is that of Dr. Mike Adenuga Jr. You know, he's an Ichebu man proper. And you could see that, hey, people can say anything, but he's not going to lose money like others because his business is organic in nature. In fact, his properties litter all the major cities in Nigeria. He's just investing. A lot of them are, his daughter had a wedding recently. Nobody knew that he owned the land next to the Kempinski, Mövenpick Hotel now, the one on Kingsway Road.
Okay.
Alfred Rewana Road now. Yes. You know, the old, what's it is, Southern Sun Hotel.
Southern Sun. Oh.
Next to it, massive. Look at the Makadenuga Center.
Hmm.
So go on Ligali Ayorinde, go on Adeola Odeku, you will find his properties everywhere.
Yeah.
So such a man, whether the stocks go higher or go lower, it doesn't affect him.
Hmm.
You go to Ibadan, all the glow offices all over Ibadan. You go to Akure, you go to, anywhere you go, you will find corn oil. You will find corn oil.
Yes.
So that is, I don't know of anybody who has that kind of properties in Nigeria. I doubt.
Hmm.
And then you are not likely to feel it. You are not likely to notice it because it just operates underground just like that. It doesn't make noise like other noisemakers. That's real money.
Hmm.
Real money is your ability to invest quietly. and then reap bountifully.
Great. that should be, you know, highlighted.
Yes.
Because a lot of people are just buying to live in.
Or to show off I have plenty of properties.
There's the aspect
marry more wives and put your harem in them.
There's the aspect of investing, and a lot of people need to understand that it's not just buying a place to live, it's buying a place to invest. And one of the joys of being an investor is seeing that appreciation. Now, for first-time investors, what are the areas they should look out for when investing in Nigeria?
If Nigeria will allow us to have a good mortgage system, is instead of just buying one property and going away, if you can spread it, it would be nice to have 2-3 different properties bringing in money for you. And then if you structure it in a way that those managing it for you, if that's another thing. You don't have to manage it yourself because that's not your business. That's not your area of expertise. So get people who can manage it. So when you are coming, maybe you are spending 2 weeks. It's about being structured. A lot of us are not structured. So say, I'm coming for 2 weeks. You give them the date so they can clear the place for you.
For you.
And then as soon as you leave again, a day or two after, they already have people to move in there. You can never lose. It's a win-win situation for you. So for me, I would suggest that people should invest in properties that they can also let out, not the property that you lock up after you go back to your destination.
How does the Nigerian market compare to other markets globally?
I've said it is one of the best. It's like a jackpot, trust me.
Really?
Especially in Lagos. Look at Lekki Axis. Lekki Axis right now is so saturated.
Yes.
Because there are businesses springing up. There are people.
Every day.
So those who can't afford the Koyi or VI, Lekki is the next place to go. So that's why even getting here, you can see the traffic everywhere.
Exactly.
Yes. Lagos, Lagos is a very, very good place to invest. You know, anybody going outside is good. Ibadan is springing up now. I was in Ibadan last weekend.
Yes, it is springing up.
It's springing up big time. And that's a place I'm looking at.
That's another.
Because right now, things are not too expensive in Ibadan.
Yes.
But very soon, it will also
become
another Lagos. Yeah, because that's the nearest to Lagos in terms of
train
status. And there is a train and all that, yes.
What is the most valuable lesson that you've learned about resilience, opportunity, and creating wealth in Nigeria?
You must build on your integrity. It's a lesson I've learned. It works for me. When you have integrity, goodwill will follow. When people
that's
can
true.
Trust you. Then your signature must be a quality signature that people know, come rain, come shine. If it's Salvation, the quality will be top-notch. If it is Daily Momo, to trust him, once he's promised on anything, he will definitely do it. That is what I enjoy today. I enjoy a lot of goodwill and you can never lose with it. A goodwill is also an investment. If you don't waste your goodwill, you will certainly make it in life.
So you didn't begin your real estate investment journey until you were 57. Now, most people watching this would say, okay, probably I still have time, which is fine. But it looks like they may read it from this angle. Maybe you didn't have all the money and then real estate is only for the rich. If you don't have the money, you can't invest. There are a lot of people that want to invest, but if you don't have the money, you can't invest. What do you have to say to that?
It's a question of priority. As I said, one, I wasn't ready to go and invest just anywhere. I had my targets. I had my sight.
So you had
always been like that. Whatever is worth doing at all is worth doing well. And if I'm not able to do it well, let me relax. Number one. Number two, I said it about building my brand. I'd rather invest money in Ovation because for as long as Ovation is alive, I and my dependents will be alive. But if Ovation dies and I buy a house, I will have to go and sell the house.
True.
Yeah. So there's no point being in a hurry. So, and that's what has been of tremendous benefit to me. The fact that while others were rushing to build properties and all that, I was building my property in my brand. Your best property is that brand. Today, we're in your studio. The best property is not where you live.
Yeah.
This is the chicken that lays the golden egg.
True.
If you don't have it, no matter how much money you have in the bank, you will run dry at some point. So, but as long as you are generating something else, and then it's also giving you not just money, it's giving you visibility.
Very true.
That's your brand.
Yes.
Nobody is going to disrespect you when they know you have something tangible you do. So, everywhere I go, people recognize me for what I do, not for how many properties I own. So those properties are the rewards of your good work.
You've been talking about Ikoyi, people investing in Ikoyi. Of course, Ikoyi is not for everybody. It's quite pricey. Ikoyi VI. Have you ever considered the, you know, the new Lagos? I'm sure you must have been hearing about the new Lagos. What do you think about the new Lagos?
I would love to, but I am not someone who believes in primitive accumulation of anything. Yes, it's good to have properties, good to invest in properties, but you must also invest in human beings. That's why I'm going into the Dele Momodu Foundation. It can't be about me. People say, oh, I'm buying property to grow my children. Only useless parents will be thinking you are the one that must buy property for your children. Your children, if you train them well enough, they should be able to buy properties for themselves. So I don't need too much of that. Right now, I've passed the stage of where I'm worrying too much about how much. I'm not competing with anybody. I'm competing with myself. And what I want now is a legacy of service to the people.
People.
Some people helped me as a young man. I also want to help others. In my old age, I want people to come to my funeral by the grace of God when I'm in my 90s or my 100s. And then and they are crying. People are wondering, why are they crying? They say, without this man, they see the way I talk about MK Abiola, they see the way I talk about Mike Adenuga all the time. These were people who also supported me growing up. So my way of compensating them, and they don't need me. Chivabella is dead now. He doesn't need me. So the best way I can also compensate them is by helping others.
Yes.
So that is my attitude. So I'm not going to acquire too many things that I don't need. I'll be happier seeing that people are happy through me. Look, I knew people growing up who were stupendously wealthy. And today, you cannot even trace the wealth. They are gone and the wealth has gone with them. So we have to get serious and have pity for the common man. Our lack of pity is what is creating all this chaos that we see around us.
So your brand has been around for so many years. How, like over 30 years, I believe.
No, we started Ovation in 1996.
Okay.
So we're 28 years plus now.
Almost 30.
Almost 30, yes.
How have you managed to keep your brand going? And now this is the question most entrepreneurs would want you to answer, because you're building a brand, you're going through the rough path right now, and sometimes you may want to give up.
There have been many times I wanted to give up. I can't give up. The first thing is my brand has been sustained. Of course, the usual thing is God.
Yeah.
But after God, there are also human beings. So God has blessed me with good friends, good team, because without a teamwork, we won't be in this studio.
Yes.
There are people handling your cameras and everything. We may think they are not important, but they are the most important here, because we are just talking. Some people are capturing it.
You know.
So for me, I've been blessed with a good team, and a lot of them have remained very steadfast. The other is hard work. Everybody else can quit Ovation. I have nowhere to go. That's my life. I always tell people, when people say, I say, yes, for you to do anything very well, your life must depend on it. My life depends totally on Ovesha. You know, so that is very important. The other thing is reinvention. You must be a master of reinvention. True. I reinvent all the time. When I went into politics, I lost, but I gained something. I gained social media. Today, there is no young man who can say, oh, he knows about social media more than Daily Momondo. No, I'm combining Ovation with social. In fact, now, today, if you are smart, you make more money online than carrying magazine on the road. People don't understand. People come to me and say, oh, are you still publishing Ovation? I say, what else can I do? My life depends entirely on Ovation. But the thing is that we're more online now. Just like you have to be current. If you look at Time Magazine, The Economist, Newsweek, everybody now is online. And so I gained over 1 million followers on Instagram, 1.8 million followers on Twitter, you know, over 300,000 on Facebook. So combined, cumulatively, have millions of organic and direct followers, which I'm not using for my business. There is nothing better than that. So the power of reinvention. And anything I see, anything good I see elsewhere, I also want to, get it going for myself. Yeah. But a lot of people go abroad, they see good things, but when they come back home, they return. So a lot of my colleagues cannot handle social media. Nobody believes that anywhere you see Daily Momo do Ovation, I'm the one doing all the work. Ovation Media Group, they have their own platform. But everywhere you see my name, I'm the one. Nobody can handle my page.
I don't understand. You're the one posting.
I'm the one posting, editing, writing stories, doing everything. Day and night. I wake up every night, because I want to target America. So I have to be awake to target people prime time. Then I sleep again, wake up by 7, 8, and I'm posting. If you want to know my movement or what I am doing at any point in time, go on my pages, you will see.
Wow, you are so intentional. I think that's the bone of contention when you're building a brand. It's your lifeblood. It's everything.
Your life must depend on it. If you're not hungry, you're not likely to be very up there. You have to be hungry. Something has to push you.
Exactly.
Yeah, so I'm being pushed by hunger, by poverty. I don't want to go back to where I came from.
No matter the obstacle.
I know God will crush it for us.
I think you always have the vision ahead. So when the obstacle comes, you are
steps
just...
Steps ahead, you are waiting for it. So yeah, bring it on.
That's a very, very, very interesting thing to do.
And I'm not greedy.
That's another thing.
I'm not greedy. I'm not selfish. I have friends who just want everything for themselves. No, I'm not greedy. If you look at a lot of our political leaders, that's the problem we have with them. People are selfish. You want to acquire. Oh, yeah. And then at the end of the day.
That's so sad.
It's very sad. Yeah. You wonder why should a man steal in arrears and steal in advance. People steal what they don't need.
It doesn't
make sense.
It's really sad. Now, with all of this, do you think, because I have diasporans who believe in Nigeria, and I have diasporans who don't believe there is a Nigeria. In fact, they're like, Nigeria is dead. There is no hope. I am not of that opinion. I still have faith. I believe the countries they are in did not just become what they are today. So, but are you of that school of thought? Is there still hope? I know you said it may not happen in your lifetime.
No, I speak about hope, I'm talking about good leaders. But Nigerian entrepreneurs like myself, we've learned to live without them. I've never been in government. You have to create your own government. Provide your own security. Provide your home. Provide your cars. Provide your water corporation. Provide your own electricity. That's it. As long as you work very hard enough, you'll be able to provide those things for yourself. That's all. So those who live abroad, if now more and more are coming, I met a lady last week in Ibadan, and she's from Ekiti. And she looked young, and I was shocked when she said, I'm going to Ekiti because my hotel is there. This is someone who lives in America. Yes, a young lady. I even promoted her on my page a few days ago, and she was very happy. We just met, by chance. So it tells you that they also now firmly believe, like we used to say, Ile lak labo isimioko, home, sweet home, is where you have to return to ultimately.
Yes.
So a lot of people are coming back home.
Sure.
Let them talk about the insecurity, about everything. Home, there's insecurity everywhere. On a single day, 3,000 people died in New York. If that happened in Africa, they would ban people traveling there forever.
Sure.
We are still all going to New York. They carry guns in shopping malls. When I'm going around shopping malls in America now, I'm scared, I'm worried. Your child is going to school. You are not sure if your child will come back home alive. Your child is watching a movie. You are not sure if there will be a shootout in the cinema. So there is nowhere that is totally safe. Let's stop destroying our country. Oh, that useless country. I'm not going to come down there. There is nothing so called. This is one of the best countries. God, and I tell people, well, even those who say we should break up, that's their right, asking for it. But personally, I believe the strength of Nigeria is in the bigness of Nigeria. We have not fully utilized that strength. And in the fullness of time, it's going to happen. How it will happen, I have no idea.
Yeah.
But let you and I start at our own personal and individual levels. Yeah.
This has been an interesting episode. Any final words to our viewers?
Well, is that while it is very tempting to give up hope, don't give up on yourself. Be yourself at all times. Everything else will be added onto it. Seek ye first that self-confidence and be a man or woman of integrity. And then you can give hope to the world. Yes, we have more than enough reasons to want to give up. But I, Dele Momodu, will not give up on myself. And I give up on government. And that is why every 4 years we must go through elections. And I give up on government, but I will not give up on myself. Thank you.
Wow, it's been an interesting episode. And beyond real estate, I love this episode because we didn't just touch real estate. I know viewers out there, they've been inspired because you've promoted audacity, intentionality about everything. Because in today's age, everyone, you know what, anywhere Belle face, you do this one. If you know work, you jump to
try
this
something
one.
Else.
And really, it doesn't work like that. And to see people who have paid their dues. You know, when I came to see you, you were like, people would think all these things just came on. Someone just gave me the money. They don't know the story of how all these things began. And you've just shared a part of that story. And I am truly inspired because I'm someone who loves to focus and ensure things are done. I am very tenacious. And to see that our daddies, you know, have gone through all that phase and they are where they are, it just inspires us out there. Now, finally, how have you managed to maintain your personality? You are so humble, so welcoming, so amazing. I'm sure anyone who has met you would say the same thing. How have you managed to maintain this personality?
I told you I came to Lagos as a nobody. I came in search of work. And I've been fortunate to meet great people who are very humble. So I took after them.
Okay.
Chief M. Koyabiola would want to send us on some assignment. And he'll be using jaw. Can you help me? Can you? And this is somebody who is paying your salary, who is taking good care of you. I see Dr. Mike Adenuga is so humble and he just lives quietly under the parapet. He doesn't make noise. You don't see his children, you know, making noise all over town. Why won't I be humble? Who is Dele Momodu not to be humble? So I'm happy. It keeps me happy. And it keeps me out of trouble. People love you when they expect you to be on a high horse, but they just see you on the same pedestal with them.
Yeah.
And that is my story. I am excited meeting people, knowing people, making new friends, and helping people. Chief Abiola used to tell us, the hand of the giver is always on top. So, if God gives you the opportunity, every day people are asking me. Sometimes I get frustrated, no question. Oh, I need this. My mother is sick, man. I would want to complain. I remember what my mother told me, that what if you were the one going to them to beg? People are coming to you to beg. You are angry. So what if God decides to reverse the roles and you are the one begging? So that has taught me a lesson that you must be humble, because nobody knows tomorrow.
Wow. Please comment below what you've learned from this podcast, because it has blown my mind.
Thank
totally.
You, ma'am. Thank you.
Thank
ma'am.
You so much, sir, for coming on our podcast. It was such a delight having you here. And I'm sure my viewers out there are blessed to have been a part of this podcast. Thank you, sir. So
thank you so much.
This is KK Show, Key to Keys. Now, we've been getting mails from different people. Confidence, we don't know how to invest. We want to invest. We're scared. Due diligence, how can we go about it? We are right here to help you through the entire process. Just send us an email or just call our numbers and we'll walk you through the entire process. Thank you for joining us on today's episode. Till I come your way again next time, it's Key to Keys.